Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. What you were just hearing was the sound of the Kenosha Pops Concert Band. And this was an excerpt from their CD called Faraway Places, A Passport for the Pops. And this was, I believe, Craig Gall leading the band in a medley from Lionel Bart's musical, Oliver. And we are talking today about the Kenosha Pops Concert Band because they are about to embark on a very special season indeed, their 100th season. And so we have with us, actually, in the studio, Craig Gall, longtime music director of the, for some time now, the director of bands at Tremper High School in Kenosha, and within the last year was appointed to be the Kenosha Pops Concert Band's new assistant conductor. And so Kathy Ripley and Craig Gall are working together to make this centennial season of the Kenosha Pops Concert Band something extra special. It's a season that actually kicks off this Saturday, the 11th of June, with a concert at the Civil War Museum in downtown Kenosha. And then the way June 15th, and will run until, I think, early August. So we have a lot to talk about in terms of this upcoming season and something about the history of the Kenosha Pops Band. So, Craig Gall, Kathy Ripley, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you very much.
Kathy, before we go any further, remind me about exactly when you received the news that you were going to be the assistant director of the Kenosha Pops Concert Band. I remember being with you pretty much.
I believe it was at Carthage College when we were performing with the Pops Band at the holiday concert. And that's when Craig approached me and said, how would you like to be the assistant director? So that's when it all began.
Wow. And what timing to be coming aboard at this moment in the band's history, although, of course, you've been a member of the flute section of the band for quite some time, so you're not new to the band, just new to the podium. Craig Gall, speaking of history and connection with the band, remind our listeners and remind me of just how far back your association with the Kenosha Pops runs. I mean, when did you first become associated with them?
I believe I started playing with the band back in 1993. I was Kenosha, Washington Junior High School, when it was the junior high back then, was my first teaching position right out of college in 1990. And I believe John Bunick talked to me either the summer of 92 or 93 to start playing with the band, and I was a euphonium player in the euphonium section. And when John left the band, Frank Germanaro took over, and he tapped me as his assistant. And so that was pretty exciting stuff. And when he stepped down 7 or 8 years later, I was very strongly encouraged to stay on board and take over the conducting duties. And that miraculously was some 20 years ago.
Wow. So this is an anniversary year for you as well.
It's an anniversary for me.
Fantastic. Kathy Ripley, I know you and your husband, Jim. Jim is a music faculty colleague of mine over at Carthage. He came to Carthage. Was it in you become associated with the Kenosha Pops band as a member of the flute section?
Oh, goodness. Probably that next summer is when they probably started. I got on faculty at Kenosha Unified, and so that next summer, I'm pretty sure that I either subbed or somehow started playing with the Pops band then. I've been playing, I've been with community bands since I was in high school. I'm from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. The band was a really big deal, and they had a student chair in the high school for the high school students. And so I was able to audition my way in, and it was such a good experience being able to sight read that music, you know, the same type of deal where you have one rehearsal and then you perform. So I did that when I was, I think, 16. And so I've always been interested in playing with community bands. So as soon as we moved here, I definitely wanted to be a part of the music scene here.
Yeah, that's certainly one way to really dig in deep and quickly is to become part of that wonderful band and that wonderful group. So again, we are talking with the two of you, Craig Gall and Kathy Ripley, on the eve of the Kenosha Pops Concert Band's 100th season, which will begin with a concert at the Civil War Museum this Saturday afternoon. Craig, we should probably turn to you for a little bit of a historical long view about this band and this century of music making. What can you tell us about the history of the group that you think would be interesting for our listeners to know?
Well, the band was established way back in 1922. It was known then as the American Legion Band and was sponsored by the Paul Herrick Post 21, our local post here of the American Legion. And the very first musical director way back then was Helmut Schaefer, and he was followed the next season by Peter Nicolai Sr. And then in 1924, the gentleman who had the longest tenure with the band, George Manupella, took over the baton, and he stuck with the band until 1961, until Frank Nicolai took over. And then shortly thereafter, in 1967, Lieutenant Colonel Mark Azzolina took over the band for a couple of years. And it was during that time that the name of the band ended up getting changed from the Kenosha Concert Band to the Kenosha Pops Concert Band. And John Bunick took over the directing duties in 1970. He directed through 1993, and then Frank Germanaro took over and stayed the band's director until about the 2002 season, and that's when I took over.
Right. So when you started playing in the band, were they already playing in Penoyer Park? Is that basically the only home that you've had with the Kenosha Pops band?
That is the only venue I remember, although I remember playing on portable band shells on Simmons Island for the 4th of July, and then they moved us over to the Fountain in Navy Park. Is that the name of the park down there by the municipal building?
Or is that Veterans Park? I'm not sure. The Veterans Fountain.
And held concerts there, which is now one of the museums down there next to Ruther Central High School, Old Bradford. So they used to have concerts there, and but that's way, way, way before both you and my times, and Kathy's too.
Right, for that matter. Yeah. When I first came to Kenosha, the first time I heard the Kenosha Pops play was down by the Veterans Fountain there, close to the lakefront, but mm-hmm. just north of downtown. And Kathy Sullivan, who was one of the lead singers on the Lawrence Welk Show,
yes,
was from Kenosha. And so she was a very special guest singing with the band. And I believe that was the summer that I moved here, or very shortly thereafter. I'd love to hear a little more about your own history with community bands, the fact that you grew up in Cedar Rapids, where there was a wonderful community band that welcomed at least a few young people into its ranks. What did that community band mean to the city of Cedar Rapids, for instance?
Oh, well, I think it still is really a powerful group that they actually play on every Sunday in major parks, and then on Wednesday in neighborhood parks. So, you know, the town, I'll never forget going to the municipal band concerts even before I played in that group, because it was my older siblings had their high school band director as Martin Mailman, and he started the group. And so when I play pieces that are arranged by him, it just brings me back full circle that, you know, this the guy that actually started that group. But anyway, the people of Cedar Rapids would honk their horn if they, you know, if they couldn't hear the applause, then they honked their horn so that the musicians knew that they were enjoying their music.
Aww.
So it's a pretty good and big tradition that has lasted through the years.
So when you are playing with the flute section with the Kenosha Pops concert band, does it feel like you're back in Cedar Rapids? I mean, is it kind of a deja vu experience, or are the two groups so different from one another that this feels really different?
They're all similar. The thing in Cedar Rapids is, you know, just like Kenosha has a feeling of the ethnic, you know, the Italian background, in Cedar Rapids you have the Czech background. And so the thing with the Cedar Rapids Municipal Band is that they would do a polka every week. And that's just a tradition that I think they're still doing, to my knowledge. But, you know, very similar programming. You know, it's definitely those pieces that are, you know, interesting to all of the people. It's not the heavy music. It's definitely the pop stuff that you put together in a, you know, the pieces that you have a little snippet of this tune and a little snippet of this tune. And, you know, just those marches. Marches are a huge part, I think, of all community bands. Not easy to play marches, but those really help the performers to learn how to get around on their instruments and to read really well. But I think that's just a staple of all community bands.
And I was so glad you said what you did, Kathy, about how it was a wonderful experience for you as a young person, maybe back in high school, to be in a community band, which, unlike the typical high school band where you're rehearsing various pieces for weeks on end, in the most community bands, you rehearse something essentially once. I mean, you have one rehearsal for the concert that's coming up just a few days later. And that's a certain kind of gauntlet that's probably a little bit of a shock to the typical young musician.
Oh, well, and we have a policy that, you know, the kids need to have graduated from high school and have played in band. And that's a really good thing to do, because I remember when I was, even though I made the audition back in high school, I'll never forget all these people had been playing for years. And they knew the repertoire, and they played so well, and I just wanted to get through a concert where I didn't make any mistakes.
Craig Gall, tell us something about the personnel who typically are seated on the stage of the Pennoyer Park band shell. I mean, what kind of musicians comprise the group?
We have every possible walk of life seated on the stage on Wednesday nights. We certainly have area band directors from the Racine and the Kenosha communities. We have accountants. We have construction workers. We have metal workers. We have all kinds of people.
We have bakers.
Bakers.
All right.
Yes, we have bakers. And that's the neat thing about community bands is it's just this mix of so many backgrounds. We have kids right out of high school, as Kathy mentioned. And I think our oldest member, oh, help me out. We celebrated his birthday at the Christmas concert. He turned 94 or 95. I can't remember what it was. But
wow.
He still brings his trumpet every week and plays along with us. So that's one of the neat things that keeps bringing me back is this neat bunch of people who happen to just get together on a Monday night. And we play through stuff. And if we have to rehearse it, we do. But come Wednesday night, we just give them the downbeat and let that band play. And what happens, happens, and we have fun from the get-go, from the first note of the rehearsal to the last note of the concert on Wednesdays.
So I'm just curious, when we're talking about a rehearsal that, in some respects, is mostly a run-through, I mean where there is not the luxury of stopping and fixing every single thing and every single piece, there just isn't time for that. And you're also, of course, like Kathy, a music educator, a band director, where the typical rehearsal is not like that. I mean, where you have a number of rehearsals in order to try to get something as polished as possible.
Precisely.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So when you're on the podium for this kind of a rehearsal, then what kind of things are you listening for or watching for? Is it just trying to fix the train wrecks? Is it as simple as that?
For the most part, that's pretty much it. I think the important things are getting the band through tempo changes, especially we like to play a lot of medleys, Broadway medleys, medleys from movies, and those are generally the hardest things to get through because of all of the tempo changes and key changes that happen throughout the course of one of these medleys. And that's probably one of the biggest things I try to work on and try to be as clear about from the podium that just those tempos are accurate and that the band feels comfortable getting through those things. For the most part, they're a remarkable bunch of people that they can sit down and just read all of this stuff on a Monday night and with very little rehearsing, we're able to put this together. The important thing is if you have to be judicious. You have to pick your battles in the rehearsal. If you feel something is borderline, oh, I think we're going to be able to get through that, you usually let it go. But if you're right, if there's just an absolute train wreck, we'll go back and fix those types of things. But for the most part, we're able to play through most of this stuff without too much rehashing of the trouble spots.
Dance middle school before that.
That's right. Do you have a whole lot of experience with this kind of rehearsal that we're talking about in the kind of the pops band format? I mean, you have experience as a player. I'm guessing maybe not quite so much experience in terms of being the person on the podium making these decisions about what to fix and what to let go.
Yeah, I'm a newbie when it comes to this, believe it or not. So I'm excited and also a little nervous. It's going to be, I think it's going to be like whenever I read through a piece with my high school band. And the only thing is that these musicians are more experienced. And so hopefully we'll be able to make it through the piece. But I am looking at it as a challenge also for me, just that I need to be really, really clear. I'm actually hoping that, it helps my conducting as well.
Yeah, in some respects, I suppose the stakes are higher in terms of clarity, because if you're not clear on the podium, then you're just that much more likely to have problems arise, whereas if what you're doing is as clear as possible and you have a great group, then chances are you'll make it through most of the pieces, at least largely unscathed. So
Kathy brings up a great point. I think my conducting has improved exponentially over the years of doing this. And again, I think the biggest challenge are these medleys. Again, I'll touch on those again, because if your band can't follow you through those transitions,
yeah,
you're in trouble. and these people just they'll go over cliffs for me. it's just so much fun, and the musicians make it fun, and the only thing I ask, Kathy, is that you save some time in rehearsal for me.
Oh, well, I hope, you know, my plan is that we get all the scores and I'll do my homework and then we'll just be able to sail right through them. So that's my plan. We'll see what happens.
I have no reservations.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Craig Gall and Kathy Ripley, the music director and assistant conductor, respectively, of the Kenosha Pops Concert Band, which is about to embark on its centennial season, its 100th season, with a concert this Saturday afternoon at the Civil War Museum in downtown Kenosha. And then the following Wednesday night, June 15th, that begins a summer season of Wednesday night concerts at the Pennoyer Park Bandshell, once upon a time known as the Sesquicentennial Bandshell, because it was for Kenosha's Sesquicentennial that beautiful bandshell was constructed. So, Craig Gall, tell us a little bit about how the season is put together in terms of choosing repertoire and going through the band's voluminous library to put these concerts together.
Voluminous is right, considering we have tunes going all the way back to the 1920s. There's thousands and thousands of selections in our library. This is a special year. When Kathy and I sat down and started pounding out ideas for what our summer season would look like, we settled upon a kind of a retrospective of the band's history. So each week is going to be a different decade or a combination of decades. Starting with the 1920s. And so as the season goes on, we'll be gradually approaching the present. But the first concert is going to be a concert of music from the Roaring Twenties. And that particular night is June 15th, and the Dave Brown Trio is going to be playing. So we've got some Sousa marches that were written back in the 1920s. Hmm. We have music from The Student Prince by Sigmund Romberg, which dates from the 20s. Some jazz music from Louis Armstrong. We've got some Gershwin on that program. And the big, big granddaddy piece on that program is going to be highlights from the Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein musical Showboat.
Showboat, what a biggie, yeah.
Which, again, dates back from the 1920s. And then the next concert on June 22nd will take us through the 1930s. Lou Rugani, who is a mainstay here in Kenosha, will be joining us that night to sing a few old standards that date from the 1930s. We'll also be hearing music from The Wizard of Oz, some early Disney music, some Irving Berlin music from the 1930s, all kinds of neat things. The week after that is a kind of a neat night because we're going to be sharing the stage with the Heartland Community Band.
Oh.
Our veteran concert attenders may remember them visiting us 6 or 8 years ago. We'll split the concert, and that'll be a concert from the Kenosha Pops perspective of big band music and music from the 1940s.
Wow.
And then after that, we have a couple of patriotic concerts to get through the Patriotic Week. But as we move on to July 13th, we're going to be combining the music of the 50s and 60s, a lot of rock and roll on that concert. But in addition, we'll be hearing things from Fiddler on the Roof, which dates from that era, and The Music Man, 76 Trombones, some wonderful music from Leroy Anderson, the Blue Tango, and you're going to be singing Moon River on that concert that's when that dates from.
Okay.
July 20th, we're going to be combining sort of a space in the Final Frontier theme with music from the 70s and the 80s. So a lot of music from John Williams and the Star Wars movie. Pop and rock and roll music from Elton John, music from The Little Mermaid, Under the Sea, and we're even going to do the hit song from the rock group Toto called Africa on that concert. and the drummers are excited about that already. Oh, and that concert is going to be extra special because we're bringing in a guest artist that evening. His name is Marty Erickson. He played tuba with us about 10 years ago. He played tuba with the United States Navy Band and was their featured soloist for 20 years. He is currently the instructor of tuba up at Lawrence University.
Oh.
And he travels all over the world playing with every possible group you can imagine. And he plays the tuba like no one I have ever heard. He's the neatest guy, and he'll be with us on July 20th. So he'll be bringing some music that we'll be performing with him as well. And that pretty much does it, except for July 27th. That's our final regular concert, and we're calling that Hitching Our Way to Our Second Century. So we're going to be combining music of the Wild West and the 1990s and beyond. So we're going to be hearing music from Paint Your Wagon and the Magnificent Seven. But in addition, you'll be hearing things from Mamma Mia and the Captain American March and You Got a Friend in Me and some of this more contemporary music from the last 15 or 20 years. And August 3rd is the last concert of the summer. And that's usually a concert of encores, audience, and band member favorites. And we just, whatever we want to have fun with that very last night, that gets us through the season, except for December 10th, which is the date slated for our Christmas concert at Carthage.
Sounds good. So, Kathy Ripley, what determines what you end up conducting on these various concerts? Do you have any say, or is it as Craig Gall commands?
whatever you want me to do, Craig, I'm at your beck and call.
Dangerous words, but okay.
Well, we try to mix it up. I try to give the assistant conductor at least three or four tunes to conduct on each concert in a variety of styles as well, a march, a medley. Just not only to give me a rest, but to give the assistant something to dig into as well. And I know Kathy's going to do great with whatever comes her way. She's also much set and ready to go.
Fantastic. And we haven't yet really mentioned the concert that's coming up this Saturday, I mean, in terms of any specifics, but I assume this concert at the Civil War Museum, which is right around Flag Day, is going to be pretty much patriotic.
It will be patriotic. It will have some. It'll be a mixed bag, like most of our any stretch, and it's the first concert of the season only after two rehearsals with the band, so we're not going to shoot for the moon on that concert, but it'll be entertaining nonetheless, and we hope everybody can get a chance to come down and have a listen on Saturday afternoon.
Fantastic. I'd love Ace. I mean, playing in the open air is always really tricky. As something of an amateur listener, as when I wander out in the audience, it sounds fantastic. Does it work well for you on the stage as musicians?
For the most part, it does. My dream would be a traditional and actual true half shell over that stage, which is what I grew up in with being in the Port Washington City Band. My folks started dragging me to Port Washington City Band rehearsals when I was just a toddler. And eventually I started playing with them too once I got into high school. But Port Washington has this beautiful band shell that dates back to the 1920s. And is a true half shell. And I think part of our acoustical issues here in Kenosha with the Sesquicentennial band shell is that gap in the back. There is a wall, a cement wall, but then there's, of course, our sound. All in all, it's a decent venue, but there are some acoustical things that could be better. But we are just thankful that we have a beautiful venue to play from.
Absolutely.
Here on the lakefront in Kenosha. I mean, you can't ask for a better spot and a more beautiful setting for evening concerts. And it was a great, great, great addition to the community when that...
Not long thereafter, in the late 1980s, that went up. Kathy Ripley, what are your feelings about that band shell and the many concerts you've played on that stage as a member of the flute section?
You know, as a musician, you can hear one another play, and so it's just really very fun to play on that stage. And I feel like we're able to hear each other fairly well. So, yeah, it's very nice. And like Craig said, the setting, you just can't beat that.
It is a beautiful setting and a great way to enjoy music. And, of course, once in a while, Mother Nature does not cooperate. So, and if we have widespread rainfall, that can lead to the cancellation of a concert or two. But we're hoping Mother Nature will smile down on the centennial season.
We sure hope that doesn't happen. When that does happen, we try to carry some of those tunes over into future concerts. Obviously, we don't have a rain site venue that we can send people to on nights that it rains. It's just cost prohibitive. But those tunes usually either make it onto future concerts or we'll carry that theme over to the next season.
There you go. And for information about the Kenosha Pops, I think you have a website, or otherwise I know you have a Facebook page. What's the best place to go for information?
We do have a website. I'm not sure if it's up and operating yet, but I think it's KenoshaPops.com, but you're putting me on the spot here.
Oh, good.
I can't even tell you what the name of the Facebook page is. It's obviously, if you look for Kenosha Pops Concert Band, you're bound to find us.
Yeah, I found it pretty easily yesterday when I took a look. So one way or another, there are a lot of different ways to find out information about various concerts. And again, the Friday night, June 15th, the first concert of the season in the Pennoyer Park Bandshell. The concert season will end on the 3rd of August. And on the podium, leading this wonderful group in its centennial season, Craig Gall and Kathy Ripley. My thanks to both of you for being part of the morning show today and for telling the happy story of the Kenosha Pops Concert Band. Best wishes to you.
Thank you, and thank you for being such a big part of our band.
It's an honor and pleasure. And thank you, Kathy Ripley, for joining us as well.
Thank you for having us.
And to finish out this portion of WGTD's morning show, here's the Kenosha Pops Band in another excerpt from their CD called Faraway Places, A Passport for the Pops. And this is an excerpt from John Philip Sousa's wonderful march called Hands Across the Sea. Again, this is Craig Gall, music director of the Kenosha Pops Band, on the podium. You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And to finish out the hour with more fun, here is a memorable conversation I was privileged to record back in 2006 with the great comedian Bob Newhart, talking about his newly published memoir called I Shouldn't Even Be Doing This. WGTD is actually located right between Milwaukee and Chicago, so our listeners are especially interested to hear all that you have to say about the wonderful city of Chicago, with whom you have such a close relationship. One thing in particular I think is especially interesting is when you say something about Chicago audiences. You say Chicago audiences just can't be fooled by a stand-up comic. In other cities, people sort of laugh where they're supposed to laugh, but people in Chicago only laugh when something is funny. Any idea why that is, and also how you've experienced that yourself?
I don't know why it is. I just know it is. I know that there you can't fool a Midwest audience as you can fool other audiences, say a San Francisco or a New York audience, because there are certain buzzwords that, like Kafka, you know. If you can work Kafka into it, you generally, a New York audience will laugh. Also putting on airs. People always say, well, you seem like pretty much like you were, you know, when you first started out. And I said, well, we have this thing in the Midwest about putting on airs, you know, and don't act like something you're not, you know.
So you think that's part of why you've sort of stayed so true to yourself, that because Chicago audiences just wouldn't have tolerated much of anything else?
Well, that, and I had a wife who kept me grounded and never let me really get too full of myself.
Very good. I know the feeling. you have also, among other things, given some of the credit for your particular wonderful, refreshing brand of comedy to some of the work which you did in law school, and in particular, an appreciation for the precise word. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, for instance, in the best example I can think of in a routine, which is one of the original routines that I started out with, submarine commander, and it's a routine on a man who, especially in service or in a large corporation, it's an example of the Peter principle. He is advanced fully two or three levels beyond his competency, and he's in charge of this submarine, and he's recalling for the crew this memorable trip that they're just ending, and he's congratulating them on the 2 minutes that they just cut off the record for a surfacing, firing at the towed target, and then resubmerging, and he's congratulating on it's a new record. They took 2 minutes off the previous record, and he said at the same time, I don't slight in any way the contribution made by the men we had to leave on deck. I think they had a lot to do with the 2 minutes we were able to cut off the record, and I doubt if any of us will soon forget their somewhat stunned expressions as we watched them through the periscope. So I think slight is just the right word, and stunned expressions is just the right word for. I think I took that with me from law school. It's one of the few things I ever took from law school.
We're glad that you did. You also talk about how comedians' comedy, I mean, other people have been more obviously subversive. In what way has the work you've done been subversive in the way you're talking about?
Well, it's in there. It's very subtle, but it's in there. For instance, when I did the retirement party, and that was really based on my experience when I was an accountant, and I worked for an insurance company. And because I first did that, and someone wrote me a letter, and they said, that they were offended that I was making fun of Charlie Bedloe, who was receiving the watch after 50 years with the company, and who was. He was blotto all the time, and I wrote back and explained to him that I wasn't making fun of Charlie. I was making fun of the system that made him get blotto every day, to get through the day. That's the only way he could get through the day. And again, in the submarine commander, it's making fun of the large corporation or the military, and then Abe Lincoln, of course, is making fun of a revered former president. So there is that element. It, it may be understated, but it's in almost every routine.
We're speaking with Bob Newhart about his wonderful new memoir called I Shouldn't Even Be Doing This and Other Things That Strike Me as Funny. You talk about how, especially in the first years of your career, you were writing almost all of your material in a vacuum, not really knowing if it was ever going to be performed. Do you think that was a helpful thing in a sense, that you were writing it in that way? Did it give you maybe a certain sort of a freedom?
Yeah, I suppose it was, Greg. Ed Gallagher and I had a syndicated radio program, which was eminently unsuccessful. We finally wound up costing us money to do it, and then Ed got an offer for a job in New York, so I was kind of on my own. And even though I had no outlet for it, I would see something and it would strike me funny, and I had to write it down. I had to get it down on paper before I forgot it. Even though I never knew where I was going to ever have a chance to perform it.
Devoted its resources to celebrating you and your career.
Exactly, and it was. And I don't know that it was so much in our lives, and how important comedy is to our lives.
Absolutely, you talk in wonderful detail in your memoir about that marvelous show which debuted in the 1970s, which so many of us enjoyed and have practically memorized word for word. I especially liked one thing you said about the way that your marriage with Emily was crafted in the Bob Newhart show. You said there was the perfect amount of tension, love, and respect to make that marriage feel real. We read those words and we realize so seldom is that balance correctly achieved elsewhere.
Yeah, that pretty accurately describes the relationship that Emily and I had, and we had respect for each other, and she was independent, but at the same time, dependent in a way on me and me on her.
Hmm. You say that in that show, it's 85% the real Bob and 15% is TV Bob. In other words, we're mostly seeing you. Most of the time when we've seen you on television and film, is that about the right proportion?
Yes. Yeah, my wife has always said, if the American public ever found out what you were really like, they would never show up. And of course, my response was, "And we're going to keep that secret, aren't we? if we want to keep living the way we're living." So,
very good.
I tend to find humor in the. I tend to deal with misfortune humorously.
You also touch at one point about how one of the costs of fame is that you're not necessarily out and about in the grocery store aisles and so on like you once were. And of course, it's those real-life encounters which generated so much of your material.
Yeah, in a way, your success, which we're all trying to achieve, it kind of cuts you off from the source of your material. And it means you just have to work a little harder at developing your material and finding it.
Well, you seem to manage to do that. Of course, your later career has also included some dramatic acting, that marvelous run on ER, for instance. Do you hope to do more of that?
Yeah, I would love to, if given the right script. And I was highly complimented that John Wells thought that I was up to that role. I always call that my first intentionally dramatic role. there have been other comedic roles I played that turned out to be tragic. That was the first intentionally dramatic role, and so not really based on what he had seen me do, but he just felt I could handle it, and I felt very complimented, and the writing was marvelous.
Well, and the folks who nominated you for an Emmy apparently thought you did a good job as well.
Yeah, apparently.
Very good. for all that you've given the American public. We thank you, and I thank you for writing this wonderful book. I shouldn't even be doing this. A pleasure to speak with you, Mr. Bob Newhart.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, you'll hear the interview that I have recorded with Dr. Ray Dorsey, who is one of the country's leading authorities on Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease, sadly, is the most rapidly growing neurological disorder in the world right now. And there are so many things that we know about Parkinson's that we did not know even just a few short years ago. And Dr. Dorsey's new book, Conquering Parkinson's Disease, gives all kinds of interesting information on what causes Parkinson's disease, what affects its development in a given person, the wide array of symptoms that reveal it, and the different ways in which we are combating this terrible disease for which there still is no cure. A comprehensive look at Parkinson's disease and what we can do to stop it.